Okay, so the purpose of my talk is to sort of advertise the idea of the Reinhardt algebra. In fact, I would like to thank the organizers here for having given me the opportunity to, in fact, to present here the solution of an old problem. Now, the solution is obtained by means of the appropriate categorical language. So what is the problem? What will the solution look like? So let me write it out. A brief way of saying it is just to write this identity. Well, I should perhaps, for those of you who would like to learn about details, you will find most of what I'm going to say, and much more, you will find it on the web. So here it is. Math. DG 02 06 143, and finally, and this is mainly what I will talk about today, SG 02 07 166. Anyway, to me, these Reinhardt structures, they are sort of interesting in their own right. And in fact, they were mentioned in the talk by Kalkali. I'm afraid he's not here today. Is he here? No. And they also occur, okay, that's, I should mention this. So we had a talk by Kalkali, who showed up already. And they also are somehow behind some developments in differential Galois theory. In fact, I talked about this a bit to our friend Andy Mudgett, and then during the conversation, or perhaps after the conversation, it sort of turned out that actually he knew more about this than he was aware of. Okay, so having said this, I now would like to come actually to the Reinhardt algebras. So I try to clean the board. So is this okay? I couldn't completely manage to have a clean board. Okay, but I guess that will do. Okay, so start with the Reinhardt algebras. And in fact, I will spend some time explaining these objects. So what is the Reinhardt algebra? In fact, it's a structure which arises by abstracting from something everybody knows very well. In fact, that's what we teach our students in first-year calculus. So you take a smooth manifold, and you take the pair which consists of the smooth functions, the vector fields. And in fact, there is now some interesting structure here, which is more than just Lie algebra. So what kind of structure would we have here? On the one hand, as everybody knows, we can multiply vector fields by functions. Okay. On the other hand, we can have X vector fields on functions by derivations, because that's what vector fields are. Now, there are two rules which everybody would believe right away, but you would usually not actually take care of writing them down. So here are the rules. Okay, so I take, well, now this is my internal notation. Okay, so alpha would be a vector field, A would be a function, so you multiply the vector field by a function. Thereafter, you apply this vector field to another function. Now, everybody knows, well, this is in fact the same as first applying the vector field to the function. Thereafter, you multiply again by the function A. And there's another rule which tells you how, in fact, you evaluate a bracket of this kind. So here you have a vector field, another vector field, and a function. Everybody knows what to do. So here is the formula. You apply the vector field to the function, multiplied by beta plus A times alpha beta. Now this shows you, in fact, the difference between an ordinary algebra and what I call Lie-Reinhardt algebra. Now, you can do quite a few things with Lie-Reinhardt algebras. I will list some of them. So there is a universal object, which sort of generalizes the universal enveloping algebra. What does it look like in the special case of infinity functions and vector fields? Well, it is the algebra of differential operators, of globally defined differential operators. In fact, if you like, you can sheafify the situation, but I won't do that today. So here, I do have the globally defined differential operators. Moreover, you can do homological algebra. So this would be x up to star UAL AM. And in particular, when you do this for this particular case, well, you get something very familiar. In fact, you get okay, so the vector fields, and now let's take the functions. Okay, now what do you get? Is there any guess? What would you get? Something very, then you get the RAM cohomology. Of the manifold. And in fact, even more is true. There's a standard complex for computing this. It would be a module. In general, it would be a module. Okay. In fact, a good way to say it is an AL module. So in this situation, in fact, it would be more or less a flat, a vector bundle, the space of sections of the vector bundle with a flat connection. But you see, this language actually is more general and allows for much more freedom. Okay, so the standard complex computing this object, and well, it's nothing else but the Durand complex in this case. And in fact, to me, if you like, we had a talk by Michael Barr here on cohomology, origins, cohomology theory, and the development of cohomology theory. To me, actually, well, he would say that somehow Cheverly-Eilenberg, that they got the differential from manifolds. Now, for me, this, in fact, is the true explanation of this fact. Okay, now, having said this, In fact, one can do much more. You can do formal differential geometry. So you can make sense of the notions of connection, curvature, characteristic classes, and so on. Now, what is the reason for the terminology? That I should perhaps say here. In fact, I guess there are people here who knew Reinhardt. Yes, many people here knew Reinhardt. Well, in fact, Reinhardt died a long time ago in an accident, I guess. Well, in an accident. He was driving with Hochschild, and they were hit by trucks, and Reinhardt was dead right away, I was told. Is that correct? Yes. Well, you see, I call these objects the Reinhardt algebras because, well, they were studied before, but Reinhardt proved, well, in fact, a number of non-trivial results about these objects. And the most important one to me, he proved, is the following one. So, what he did is he considered a special case. Okay, now let's take the general situation here. But let's assume that L is projective as an A module. And then he proved that in this case, in fact, well, that's a standard filtration, as everybody knows from the algebras. Now the associative gradient is the symmetric algebra, the symmetric A algebra on L. So this is the Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt theorem for Lee Reinhardt algebras. Okay. Now, unfortunately, this is not a talk about Lee Reinhardt algebras, so I have to stop here. There would be many more things I should say about Lee Reinhardt algebras. Now, for the rest of the time, in fact, I would like to sort of illustrate how you can use them to solve a classical problem. So, okay. Actually, no one. I'm truly amazed. So no one was asking what actually this identity means. Well, perhaps I should leave it as a puzzle for the audience and see at the end whether anybody will solve the puzzle of what is the meaning of this identity. Yes, what is Q and what is R? That's the question. Okay. Actually, it's not a mathematical identity. So Q stands for quantization and R stands for reduction. So the statement is that quantization commutes with reduction. Okay, see if you write it out, QR equals RQ. Okay, so quantization commutes with reduction. That's what the statement is. Okay, now I will switch to Poisson algebras. We'll be very brief here. So what is a Poisson algebra? We take an algebra, commutative algebra, with an additional structure. Which is a Lie bracket. This is some better truth. Okay. And we say it is Poisson, provided, well, we have the Leibniz rule. So provided the multiplication behaves as a derivation for the bracket. So we would have A, B, C plus, let me see whether I can do this correctly, A, C, B. Yes. Of course, there's a standard example R2N, which I guess everybody knows. Just take, well, the formula, which in fact comes from, well, it comes essentially from physics. So you take coordinates Q, J, and P, J, then you would take SQJ, DH, DJ, minus SDPJ, DH, QJ. Actually, this operation was introduced by Poisson. And that's why the structure is called Poisson packet. So this was Poisson in 1809. It's much older, actually, than modern symplectic geometry. There's another example which I call the exotic plane, and I only want to mention this here because, in fact, there are many more examples like the exotic plane, but just to indicate that, in fact, that's sort of the point I want to make here, why Poisson, not why just stay with ordinary, say, ordinary symplectic geometry, ordinary smooth functions. So here's an example which perhaps looks a bit surprising at first. So we take the plane, but now we take three functions. So we have the ordinary coordinate functions, but we also take the radius function. Okay, now the radius, as you know, is not a smooth function, not an ordinary smooth function. Okay, so you take smooth functions in these variables, and you divide by this relation, as everybody knows, as one should do, and you work with the radius. And here's the Poisson bracket. X, y equals to r, x, r equals to y, and x, y equals minus 2r. Okay, so here you have a non-standard structure. In fact, what you really do here is you take your plane. X, y equals 2r. X. Yes, you are right. Yes, yes. Thanks a lot. Yes, of course. Y. That's what I mean. Y, r equals minus 2x. I hope I didn't mess up. Okay. Anyway, it's, you see, what is behind is SL2. Okay. It's what you really do here. You see, instead of thinking of your plane, of your ordinary plane, you would take the half cone. And what you've done here, in fact, you've taken the Whitney smooth functions on this half cone. So you take restrictions of functions in the ambient space. There's still a Poisson bracket on this space with a singularity. And in fact, this is only the origin of a long story and leads to what I can't explain this here in detail, but I wanted to say this at once, in fact, what I call exotic, well, and many other things, exotic Kähler spaces. So the exotic Kähler structures, and in particular, there would be exotic projective varieties. It does not. You see, in fact, since you are asking, the space is stratified, has two strata. So one stratum is the cone with the cone point removed. The remains of the cone point now on the stratum with the cone point removed. In fact, it comes from a symplectic structure. But on the whole space, in fact, it does not even make sense to think of it in terms of a symplectic structure. Okay. Yes. Okay. So far. That's all I want to say about Poisson. Now the next item would be a few remarks about quantization. So what do we mean by quantization? Well, a very concise way to say it, also it's sort of brutal, but the concise way to say it would be, so we take, okay, in fact, this, if you like, sort of back, sort of goes back to Dirac. So Dirac noticed an analogy between the quantum mechanical commutator and the Poisson brackets. Now, when we use the term quantization, what we mean is, so given now a Poisson algebra, so what we want to do is we want to construct a representation of its underlying Lie algebra. We forget the multiplication. Indeed, when you start thinking of it in terms of physics, then you notice that the multiplication of functions has no physical meaning. So the true physical meaning is in the Poisson bracket. We forget about multiplication of functions. We're interested now in representations of the underlying Lie algebra. Okay, so what we want is a representation by operators, in fact, symmetric operators on a Hilbert space. The two conditions, well, the first condition is that, in fact, now this makes precise what I said in words before, that the commutator, the quantum mechanical commutator, should correspond to the Poisson bracket. This should be 1 over I times the commutator of the quantized objects. Actually, one has to use here the factor I has to come in for reasons related to the interpretation of quantum mechanics. You see, because the commutator of two symmetric operators is not symmetric. Yes, but for the interpretation, you need symmetric operators. Okay, so there's no other way. Okay, so there are two more requirements. So the second is that a constant is represented by the corresponding multiple of the identity, and there's an irreducibility requirement. Now here, in fact, because of this requirement, you cannot take the obvious thing. So you could not take the adjoint representation. That's a very important remark. Okay, so this, in fact, rules out the adjoint representation. The real one has to do some work to solve the problem. In fact, it is known in this phrase, in this way, it cannot be solved. Okay, but now I'm running out of space over there. I have to keep this. So what you would do in standard geometric quantization, but I will only write down the terms to the board. So an ordinary geometric quantization, what you do is you start with a symplectic manifold and you take what is called a prequantum bundle, and you would use the notion of polarization. Now there's an entire program, in fact, that you can push through, and in the end, you can sort of approximate the situation here. However, it only works for smooth symplectic manifolds, and I haven't said anything about the symplectic manifolds anyway. And the point I want to make here is that even You see, this program would not even work for examples as simple as that one. Actually, it's perhaps interesting to notice once this example comes from angular momentum, zero. So this true physics behind. But you could not do it within this approach. But actually, you can do it when you use the correct language. And to me, the correct language here, in fact, is not of the Reinhardt algebras. And that I would like to explain for the rest of the time. However, before I can do that, I have to make a few remarks about symmetries. And this also is sort of nicely related to will this box stay? No. This fits nicely with the spirit of this meeting because, in fact, I would like to think of these symmetries as kind of a generalized Galois theory. I couldn't make too much sense yet out of it, but yet philosophically, that's what it should be. Okay, so now we take symmetries. And the situation is, in fact, to simplify, let me take a Lie group. And we start now, so I have to borrow terminology from symplectic geometry. So in fact, we start now with an ordinary symplectic manifold. And we say, in fact, we assume that the action is Hamiltonian. So this is the appropriate way of making sense of the idea of symmetries here. So G acts on N, but it not only acts, it preserves the symplectic structure, but there is more. There's what is called a momentum. Well, I'm afraid it's not too illuminating when I write down now the defining property, but anyway, so the defining property would be that so we take an element in the Lie algebra. This would be the vector field on N induced by the action. Now, this would be a one form. You require this should be equal to, you take the derivative and you combine it with X. So this is the defining property of the action being Hamiltonian. Now, don't worry. You may use it as a black box. But the important thing is now to sort of get rid of the symmetries in the following fashion. So you introduce a new space, you take the zero locus of this map, and you divide by the action of the group. So this is what is called reduced space. And this space, in virtually all cases, no longer is a smooth manifold. However, it inherits a Poisson structure. And how does it inherit a Poisson structure? So what you do is you put some structure on the space. And as you can see, in fact, you could play this game in other categories. But now for simplicity, let's do it in the smooth category. And the structure you put on this space is you take ordinary infinity functions on N, you take gene-invariant functions, then you divide by the ideal of gene-invariant functions which vanish on the zero locus. And you observe that dangerous. I hoped I could use the clean board, but that does not seem possible. Okay, so the crucial thing for this lecture is that, in fact, the symplectic Poisson structure descends to a Poisson structure on this algebra. In fact, this would be a particular case of this construction. Okay, now having reached that stage, I cannot explain, in fact, the way out. The way out is now to combine Poisson structures and Lee-Reinhardt structures. So I wrote this out a while ago. You find the details in a paper of mine in the Krelle Journal Feine Angewandte Mathematik, was in 1990. Okay, so what you do is, so we start with the Poisson algebra. Now I'm going to explain sort of replacements for the object over here, but in a more general situation. So we take the formal differentials. In fact, this takes me back to, again, to Michael Boff's talk. This is sort of related with the object diff. Yes. Okay, so we have the formal differentials. And now what we will do, we will, in fact, turn the pair A dA into a Lee-Reinhardt algebra. The Lee-Reinhardt algebra structure comes from the Poisson structure. Now, how can we do this? Okay, so the first observation is that, in fact, you can define the two form in an obvious fashion by just taking the Poisson bracket. Now, using this two form, have an adjoint, goes from dA to HOM A, AA. But now you remember, in fact, that the defining property of the formal differentials, you use the defining property, and it tells you that, in fact, this is canonically isomorphic to the derivations. Yes, so we already have no longer on the board, we had two pieces of structure. L, and also there was a bracket, there's a bracket involved. So we already have this piece of structure without actually knowing the bracket. And this structure is the obvious. So what remains is now to sort of describing the bracket, but there's, in fact, an obvious way, and there's only one way to do it. So this bracket defined by taking du, dv. So I define it on the generators of the formal differentials, then extend it in an obvious fashion, in the obvious fashion. This is one way of doing it. Now the formula is very simple, it's just this. Looks quite a bit mysterious, but that's what it is. And the result is that, okay, so we write d sub bracket for the structure obtained in this way. How much time do I have until? How much time? Yes, but how many minutes are there left? 10 minutes or 15? 15, okay. Okay, that will do. Yes, now, in fact, the result is that the structure we obtained in this way is a Lie-Reinhart algebra. Brief remark, in the special case when you start with a symplectic Poisson algebra, then actually this object here is essentially, this is not quite true, I'm not going into this, but essentially it comes down to the Lie algebra of vector fields. Well, it generalizes. Yes, so the theory is more general. In fact, the language enables me to say this, the new language in terms of Lie-Reinhart algebras. In particular, you see, here A is arbitrary, so there's no way here to singularities might be there, and you can just handle them in this language, but you could not before. In particular, the exotic plane can perfectly well be handled in this language. Yes, and okay, now let's come back to the general case. So this pi actually is an important piece of structure in this story. So pi is a two-form, an alternating two-form A. In fact, it's a two-cocycle. And as we know, two cocycles, in fact, have something to do with extensions. We can play this game here. Yes. Oh, yes. 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 Oh, yes. And in fact, see, the extension, if you do this in the Durand complex, now this would be the infinitesimal version of the principal circle bundle with connection. You see, but now, in fact, you can say this in this language. So, version of the principal is one bundle with connection. Yes. In fact, there's more which should be said here. There's a geometric notion related. In fact, a particular case of the Lie-Reinhardt algebra would be what is called a Lie algebraoid. I should say this perhaps once. And these Lie algebraoids, they might or might not integrate to what is called Lie groupoids. So you see all these notions, they fit actually in a way fit very well with what is perhaps behind the ideas of this meeting. So there's a notion of a Lie groupoid. And also perhaps sometimes in the future one could perhaps make sense of. See, I only have the infinitesimal version now of what would correspond to this principle as one bundle, but it would be very nice now to sort of globalizing these objects in this language. Anyway, now let's come back to extension theory. And this is crucial now for solving the quantization problem. In fact, for a technical reason, the correct thing to do here is to take the negative on this 2-co cycle. So let's take the extension. I write it this way. So I guess everybody in this audience would know how you construct this extension. You take the direct sum, okay, now you, and then, in fact, you take, first you take the obvious bracket, then you modify it by the 2-co cycle, just as if we're doing extensions of Lie algebras, and it perfectly works in this setting. And now, let's come back to our problem, to quantization. Okay, so the crucial observation now is this one. So we have our Poisson algebra. Now we can map the Poisson algebra into this object over there. Okay, so now I refer to this description. So I send A to the obvious object here. So I send it to A, the common dA. And it turns out that this is now a morphism of Lie algebras. And what it does for us, this construction, it reduces the construction of Lie algebra representations of the underlying Lie algebra. It reduces the construction to the construction of representations of this object. Okay, so it reduces construction Lie algebra representations A to representations of this object. Now, in fact, the entire situation has been sort of algebraicized. In fact, we can now talk about what I call pre-quantum modules. Instead of looking for representations of A, I'm now looking for representations of L bar sub bracket. But here's the definition. Okay. We can talk about modules. Either you make it precise in terms of the universal object, or you describe it on the nose, what you mean by a module with respect to the structure. Anyway, there's a category, there's no problem with modules. Now we call it prequantum module. So this looks a bit technical, but this is only because of the problem we want to solve. So we require it to be, now, in fact, to have a bit more structure, so there'll be complex vector space. Okay, and now when you take, when you write the model structure in this way, the two requirements, perhaps I should not spend too much time on this. This is technical. But anyway, I have got to say it once. So this takes care of the requirement that constants should be represented by multiples of the identity. And the second one is that the values actually lie in the complex endomorphisms. And then, once you have this, I'm afraid I should more or less come to an end. So I can't explain all the details I wanted to explain. But anyway, once you have this kind of structure, now you multiply by minus I chi and this morphism of the algebra. So over there, now you indeed, you get nearly what you want. So this will satisfy the requirements we had 1 and 2, but not 3. Okay. Let's see. Now, what is the main result? In particular, at least I have to make a remark how one actually takes care of the third requirement. So the main result now will be this. Okay, so instead of starting now with a symplectic manifold, I start in fact with a Kähler manifold, and I have a group of symmetries, so if you like a Galois group or whatever you would think of it. So Hamiltonian action. Okay, now what happens is that you can prove, and I can say this only in words. Now the reduced space. So this is a notation introduced before. So it was the zero locus by the symmetries. In fact, this space inherits now the structure of what I call a stratified Kähler space. So I can't make this precise, but it inherits a complex analytic structure. structure, and they combine to what I call a stratified Taylor space. Okay, and now, so I seem really to run out of time. Okay, so now you push through. What you can do in this language, the standard procedure would be to take what is called pre-quantum bundles and polarization. Now you can do this in the Lie-Reinhardt setting, and in fact, so when you start with a pre-quantum bundle upstairs, this would inherit a structure of pre-quantum module. Now this structure descends. In fact, we get a pre-quantum module 4 C infinity, C with a reduced bracket. Moreover, we have, okay, I already said this, the complex analytical structure descends as well. As already indicated in theorem 1. Now, having done all this, now here's the main result. In fact, the main result is now just again this identity. Now, what does it mean? Now, it means the following. So, given a function which is now supposed to be a G invariant quantizable observable, okay, so there is, in fact, an obvious map from, so I have this M over there. Now I take, in fact, you see M on the space of smooth sections. Now the notation here is intended to indicate, now we take, in fact, holomorphic sections with respect to the complex analytic structure. And in fact, the notions of, in fact, the Cauchy-Riemann operators can be made sense downstairs, even though we have a space with singularities. So take invariants, and there's an obvious map into the same structure downstairs. So I can only say this in words. In fact, this means that there is a way, as I already said, to make sense of the Cauchy-Riemann equations. Okay, now you have this. Okay, then what happens is that, in fact, rho F hat S equals F. Now this would be the corresponding element downstairs, rho of S. Okay, so S any section which is G invariant. Okay, so that's perhaps a good time to stop. So there are many examples where actually this goes through, and it is consistent with the standard procedure upstairs. Okay, so thank you for your attention.